The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. This is the morning shift. I am he, and he is I.
I told you I can deal with the good morning.
He is a whiny All-American, national champion, former Atlanta Falcon. Don't ask him what the P and Michael P. Johnson stands for.
Man.
This morning is not what I expected it to be. I did not expect to be in here and know that we're about to talk about a victory, an upset, crazy victory from our Hawks.
Yeah, what do they call it? The NBA Cup? Future NBA Cup champs?
Yeah, whatever, man.
Everything else that comes
NBA
along
Cup.
With it. What did you think of the floor design last night for the Celtics? Wait. Hang on. I'm sorry. Not to cut you off. Before we go any further, I can't go any further without asking about the critter that was in your attic. It was the attic, right? Or just the crawl space?
No, it's the attic.
Dude.
I'm a basement. I don't know if I really have a crawl space, so to speak.
Okay. All right. There you go.
Right?
I've been, I didn't ask you this morning on purpose. I wanted to ask you on air so that we get an update for everybody. I got to know what's the deal with the critter, because you left us in a slight cliffhanger yesterday, had somebody to come look at it. Was it a rat?
So Mr. Horner showed up, literally as I
did you go into the attic with him?
No, I'd already been up there. I didn't need to go there.
So you didn't follow back to, okay.
No, I didn't. I had been up there. I'm the one that discovered this whatever. So I was like, you know, I just woke up from my nap. Actually, it woke me up. So I got like 20 minutes of one. And so I went up there and I talked to Mr. Horner. I haven't seen Mr. Horner in a while. And so I said, all right, well, look, I'm going to let you do your thing. So he went up there and he goes, yeah, there is something definitely that's going in and out. And he's like, it's squirrels, I can tell you.
Squirrels?
He's like,
well, that's good news.
He saw tunnels in the insulation.
Sure.
That they had been, where they've been running. He saw what looked like a little nest. He goes, anytime something's chewed, like you saw some stuff chewed, that's definitely them. He's like, potentially there might have been a rat or something at one point. He's like, I don't think there's one there. He goes, it's squirrels. So, he is going to safeguard my house now this weekend from the squirrel entries. So basically there's areas in the gutters.
I could have done that for you.
So they're gone. Like there's no traces of them still being there.
They better get out now if they're not, because they're about to get locked in.
No, no, not necessarily. What it is they are basically coming in when it gets a little bit cooler and then leaving. So what they're doing is they are preparing for winter.
That happened to my truck one time.
And
you're kicking them out on the street.
Yeah. Well, if you want, I can trap them in safe cages and bring them over to you.
This is my house.
It wouldn't be my problem. I rent. So, I'm just kidding.
I mean, you can release them in the apartment complex, or condo complex.
Make sure they don't catch you on camera doing that.
I'll take them to the trail that's near me. There you go.
There you go.
Well, that's what's funny is that's what originally I thought he might do. He's an outdoorsman, Mr.
Sure.
Horner. He goes to Appalachian Trail, goes kayaking down rivers,
so he likes
canoeing.
To conserve is what you're.
Yeah, he's
a true outdoorsman.
Yes, he's awesome. Like when he goes and grabs a snake from somebody's house, he told me he went over to these people's house the other day and he grabbed corn snake is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, he's like it was in the kid's bed. He's like, going in there.
Where do you live?
No,
it wasn't in Woodstock where. He did that. He's a Cobbite. He lives in Cobb County, but he travels around to do this. I mean, this is his gig.
Hang on. Pause.
I'm gonna tell you. All right. He said he got a call, and this family said, "Hey, our son, his room is in the basement. He found a snake in his bed." So
I feel better because the room's in the basement. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make me feel better because literally that's where I stay is my basement. I mean, my sleeping quarters is in my wife with my wife. But
nothing about that.
I hang out in the basement. That's where my office and my TV, my den is. He says he goes down there and he goes, this family was so scared but excited. He goes, they treated me like I was Steve Irwin. And I go, really? Well,
that's what I would do.
He goes, they were filming. Well, like when I came in, they recorded me with their phones. He goes, I just went down there and grabbed a snake. Put it in a little bag, and he goes, I took it off to the woods, way away from there, you know, somewhere out where it wouldn't be. I think he goes areas he knows that it's not going to.
Did he say how they discovered it? How did they discover that snake?
They pulled back the sheets or something.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. He said that when he found it, the snake was on the bedpost. So anyways, he's coming out. It's going to cost me a couple of grand to safeguard the house, but he's going to basically take it where any area where they're just wiggling their way in or going through, because you know they can come through gutters, he's gonna fix up for me. But he's also for Tiff, because I know you were just kind of asking. They're not gonna get trapped in, but he is going to put these little devices that look like it looks like a cage when you first look at it, but it's a one way door.
Yeah, like a crab trap.
Yeah,
you should be like the guy that had a was it a groundhog? It's years ago. It's been viral like 8,000 times. Like it recirculates every I don't know, a couple of years, every few months. And it kept eating out of his garden. So he's like, what is stealing all this food? Let me set up a hidden camera. And then one day the groundhog pops up right in front of the camera eating like a giant tomato. So then he felt bad. You know what? I'm not going to try to kill these things off. What I'm going to do is heavily, like really protect my garden. But I'm going to make a mini groundhog garden, and there's little picnic tables and everything. So like he would keep track of them. The family would show up. Eventually, you know, they would die and stuff, but more would come.
Well, so you know,
it's kind of cool.
The only way that the squirrels can figure out how to live in my attic from moving forward is if they know how to prop the door open as one leaves and the rest go come in. But I don't think they'll figure that out. But he was like, hey, we can do it one or two ways. We can put traps up, and you might have to keep putting traps up. And I said, look, I'm not into killing squirrels or trapping them. I was like, I just want them to live a good life in someone else's house.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. I'm going to actually redo that and say this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Dylan, give me the thumbs up there. You know what? Squirrel sounds like a heck of a mascot name. Which is my segue into the college football rankings. How about that? I'm on fire.
Are the squirrels on top? The Oregon squirrels?
Sadly, they are not. But if you had ducks in your apartment, you would be winning right now because they are number one. Ohio State at 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana 5, BYU 6, Tennessee 7, Notre Dame 8, Miami at 9, Alabama at 10, Ole Miss at 11, and your dogs sitting at 12 after getting knocked off by Ole Miss over the weekend. A lot of shuffling around.
It's, and there'll be a lot of conversation probably throughout the next couple of days until more things pan out about 10 through 11. I think I don't have a lot of confidence in Alabama. I'm a Bama guy. They've played so up and down this year, but I think Georgia's played the same way. I think Ole Miss has played the same way. So I think that each of these programs probably have holes in their resume that you wish you didn't have, and there will be a lot of conversation about their schedule, how hard, how easy, whatever else it is. The bottom line is if you're Georgia, you got to go deal with business against Tennessee this weekend. If you're Ole Miss, you got a couple of games left, too, on the schedule, and Bama will be headed to Oklahoma next weekend. So there's just a lot left to be played out in terms of that, but I think it is kind of a good talking point, good jumping off point to talk about where those guys are now. Because I know there's been a lot of back and forth in terms of where some of these SEC teams land.
Yeah, I know that I saw some Georgia people that follow the team, and as far as in the media and stuff, and do stuff around them, and they were very upset but they were kind of taken back that Georgia was all the way at 12. And you know, if you ask the committee, they talked about offensive consistency, they talked about turnovers, they did talk about the Georgia defense. But I'm okay with it. I don't like the fact that Miami is above Alabama, Ole Miss, or Georgia.
That was going to be my question. If you're not happy specifically with Georgia being at 12.
That's the one that probably bugs me the most. Look, you can go through here. Florida has the toughest schedule in college football history this year. Georgia is right there with them to me. And I think Georgia's schedule is not as tough, but it's still extremely tough. And so the two losses. But the problem is when Georgia has played bad to so-so teams, they haven't looked like the Georgia of the past. And I said it in a crossover, stop telling me how good you are with who you've lost to and how you've lost. And that's been the kind of thing that every time Georgia has lost and has either missed or been close to missing out on the playoff, that's been the argument. I think that Georgia is a good team, but they are not the team they've been in the past. They haven't been dominant, really, at all. The most dominant they looked was against Texas. And I don't even know what to make of that game now, because you went to Ole Miss and you just laid an egg. You can't run block. You can't pass protect. You're turning the football. You're playing un-Kirby Smart coach team-like.
Yeah, I agree. And really, I think if you're a Georgia fan and you're trying to make the argument that you jump up to 10, I think that's kind of a hard argument to make, because 10 and 11, you lost to both of them. Now, you could say it's on the road, or you could say that all three of the teams should be higher than that. My question will be, looking at this, if Georgia does pull off a victory against Tennessee, how far up can that victory carry them after this weekend? Right? Does Georgia jump in Alabama or an Ole Miss? Because Alabama's got the Mercer Bears this weekend.
How can you jump two teams that beat you?
That's my point. You got to look at the losses though.
Couldn't you just drop Tennessee to 12 and move all of the other teams up one spot and say
you could?
That's a safeguard.
But now you're dealing with Tennessee being behind Alabama,
which
in the same
sense.
Situation.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a round robin when you look at those. That'll be the curiosity for a lot of people.
Look, a lot has gone on in the last 24 hours, from the poll to the Hawks. Braves, which star player is now on the move? We'll have that when we come back here later on in the show. But up next, what concerns you most about the Denver Broncos defense as the Falcons get ready to face them this weekend? That is next here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
In the lane. Little right-hander is no good. Rebound tipped up and in. Onyeka Okongwu just tipped it in, and the Hawks have taken the lead. Atlanta takes the lead. 117-116.
That was Steve Holman on the call of the Hawks beating the Celtics last night. 117-116. And a little bit of a nail-biter there right at the very end of that one.
Yeah, it definitely was. Came down to, obviously, the last couple possessions. Both teams kind of trading turnovers before Jaylen Brown gets up a shot at the buzzer but doesn't fall. And Hawks get one of the more improbable victories that I've ever seen in an NBA game. I mean, let's just call it what it is. Quinn Snyder yesterday said basically that it was like a football team playing without their top three quarterbacks. Didn't have a ball handler. Dyson Daniels, obviously, way down in his history, has been able to pull that off. But, man, it's I just couldn't believe what I was watching, because I watched basically the fourth quarter of this game, and I was like, what am I even seeing? Hawks didn't lead throughout the game, probably since the first quarter until that tip-in, and just crazy. 16-point underdogs and able to pull it off last night.
Snapping a two-game losing streak of their own and then being able to take out the defending two-time NBA champs. I'd say that win was pretty significant. What do you think it might do for this team going forward? And considering the fact that they didn't have the services of Trae Young in this one as well.
Yeah, he's got that Achilles tendonitis, which is apparently a thing these days. because Christian McCaffrey had it, Trae's had it, and it's not something you've heard a lot of in the past. So hopefully that's he gets past that. I just think it gives a team some confidence, especially you don't know how long they're going to be without Trae. I mean, I'm not sure how long he's going to be, you know, this is going to keep him out. But
I don't think they play again until Friday.
Yeah, it just gives you a little bit of confidence, right? I mean, and that's kind of what is important, getting some confidence. And is it Washington they play next? And I think it's a NBA Cup game as well. Yeah.
We're going for the trophy.
Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, we're going for the trophy. If they'd have lost, they'd be like, man, who cares about the NBA Cup? But now they want, like, yeah, we're going for the trophy. No big deal.
I don't know. I got thoughts on, I don't necessarily understand it. I know it's a round robin thing, and then you play in games in like a semi or something, and then in a finals. I don't know. It's weird.
It's more ways to win stuff.
It feels.
Let me pause you.
But
because
it doesn't even get you in the playoffs if you win it.
Let me pause you, though, because I do feel like Boston had some guys that were dinged up. And I saw a couple people on the socials yesterday saying they don't know if, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Tatum, maybe, and maybe Derek White. They were like, I don't know if Boston plays these guys if it's not an NBA Cup game. So I think there's a positive side to that. I think there is. I truly believe that.
If I'm Boston, I'm not overly caring if I – this is going to sound extremely silly, but in today's NBA, maybe it's not as silly as it's going to sound as I say it. If you were to advance all the way to the end, now you're having to play an extra game in the regular season if you win the NBA Cup. And I know it's just one game, but this is a league where load management has become such an issue that the league has talked about how to handle it, right? So I don't know if you're a team that just went in a long playoff run, is expected to go in another. Do you really want guys playing extra games if you don't have to?
Yeah.
Would be my question. Again, it's one game. I get it. But it's just something that pops in your head. So if you can give them a night off, you can. But they're 9-3. I think they want to probably get as far out as they can and then coast the rest of the year, maybe.
Yeah, I think they definitely do. And you got to give love, first of all, to Jalen Johnson, the triple-double. I saw Trae Young's tweet last night. He called him Jalen Trip-Dub Johnson, said this is about to be a regular for him. Dyson Daniels, obviously, like I said, handling the ball a lot last night, and that's not something you didn't know he was comfortable doing it until last night, although he did have 5 turnovers but played a nice night. And Onyeka, probably Onyeka's best game at least since the opener. And I thought it was awesome to watch, man. Just a lot of guys digging deep and playing roles that they're not used to and being able to get it done. We just did not – listen, you didn't think that Keaton Mitchell and Garrison Matthews and Larry Nance would be playing such meaningful minutes in a game this early in the season. But here's where we find ourselves, man. Yeah. So, and you know, look, shout out to them for being able to do it and pull it off.
Kind of shows a little bit of depth there. So that's never a bad thing to see. When it comes to the Falcons, they're taking on the Denver Broncos this weekend. And – there are some things to be concerned about, at least when I'm looking at it with Bo Nix, grandma, friend of the show. No, not really. She's never called in. But
well, we should have her on. Can we get her on?
No way. I'm not going to do
Why
that.
Why not? I mean, you should be a great guest.
But anyway, when you look at that team, things are coming together for him this season with, I know, your favorite, Sean Payton.
Ugh.
They almost knocked off the Chiefs. If it wasn't for that blocked field goal at the end of that, they likely could have had a win. Over the defending Super Bowl.
Yeah, it would have been their first loss, too,
so,
Tiff.
Yeah, and it would have been the Chiefs' first loss of the season. So you got a young quarterback that has really bought in, and I just think is perfect for the system in Denver.
Well, I think you're right about him being perfect for what Sean Payton wants to do in that system. But I think this is one of the better scenarios as a rookie quarterback you can walk into with the defense as good as it is. And that's Vance Joseph's defense. Obviously, Sean Payton is – the head coach, and he's doing wonders with Bo Nix, but this is a top 10 defense in almost every major category. That's the thing that scares me. Points allowed, they're fourth. You've got, you know, their rushing defense is top 10. Their passing defense is top 10. Their total defense is fifth in the league. It's funny because some of the areas that we're really good at, Mike, they're really good at. But the two that really stand out to me is the fact that they're second in the league in sacks, and the fact that they are the fourth best red area defense in the NFL. Those are areas. The red area is somewhere where I feel like we have struggled too much for a top tier offense, which I think we can be, and we have been at times. That's one that really worries me.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And they've got a number of good pieces. And, you know, Jonathan Cooper on defense, it'll be rushing the edge. He's had 6.5 sacks this year, so that's something to kind of keep our eyes on. They've got good players, man, and they play hard. And here's what I'll say. Look, I think it's very clear on the show that neither one of us, you and me, are fans of what Sean Payton is. But it's clear to me that he also has a way inside of those locker rooms to get his players to love him and to get them to play hard. And in the NFL, that is half the battle a lot of times. How many times in the last couple of weeks have we talked about players' comments about coaches and about the coaching staff? And you see coordinators being fired. You see head coaches being fired. You see all this other stuff going on. And yet, Sean Payton seems to get guys to play hard no matter what. And they usually end up loving.
You just saw it with New Orleans.
Right, yeah. You saw it last week with New Orleans. I thought you were mentioning the fact that Denver played New Orleans two weeks ago.
No, sorry. Yeah. The point you were making about seeing teams. Yes.
Yeah, and look, I think that's something to focus on. I think it's going to be a battle. Look, to me, Denver is very similar in a lot of ways just in terms of how their season's been up and down to what the Falcons are. You lose some games you probably shouldn't. You win some games that you know maybe shouldn't be in. And you have a lot of ups and downs in terms of the quarterback efficiency. I think you started the season 0-2 in Denver, and Bo Nix didn't throw a touchdown pass. Then all of a sudden, you're matching up with good teams, and you're really turning a corner. So it's going to be a gritty game. There's no doubt about it. And, we'll see if, like you said, good versus good. If the Falcons can go out and run the ball against one of the top 10 run defenses in the NFL, then that's going to be a huge plus.
Well, they're going to have to. They're absolutely going to have to. I go back and look at what this team did to Tampa early. And we thought, maybe Tampa's not that good. Well, Tampa is really good on offense. Whatever their record is, Tampa's a top 5-10 offense in the league right now. Go back and look at it. And they went into Tampa and absolutely dominated Tampa up front. I think they sacked Baker Mayfield 6 or 7 times. And that's one of the things that you look at this defense. They're good in the back. They're good at every level.
I just hear that number and I almost get emotional, because what does that feel like, man?
What
does that feel like to be able to rip off that many sacks and get in a guy's face?
What are you talking about? We've got 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to talk about getting emotional? I wanted to make sure that I had the sack number right for Denver, because it's one of the few things I don't have on my grid. And I went and pulled it up, and it pulled up. I went to click on NFL total, the site that I use, but it went to NFC. And
you had the wrong team.
No. It's just like there's all these double digits, and then there's a single digit number, and it's ours. And my heart sank a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think I am getting to the point where, and I refuse to let our show be a show that only talks about sacks, because I think it just, I could hear this all day long. Like you hear the same thing, and it just gets so tiring hearing, is there anything else this team can do or can't do? Yes, there is. But when you see it, it just hurt my heart a little bit.
It just has become, and I'm with you, man. I think there's so many good things to focus on with what the Falcons do, and you know the ways that they can win games. And it honestly is pretty incredible if you really start to put everything together. The fact that you have the record you do with the sack number you have, like you're not you didn't just fall into last place or in the sack category or get somebody injured or whatever. Like that's just who you are as a defensive front. That's who you are as a defense. Just not able to get home. Like we talked about yesterday, Grady's leading the team with 2.5. And it's almost a credit to everybody else, right? And really, Raheem Morris and the way this team goes about its business, that they've been, you know, that they're in the driver's seat in the division. It's crazy. And you just wonder what this team can be if they could find some kind of rush and find a way to start getting home. And I don't know if that's Judon getting his legs underneath them or finding, you know, good matchups for Arnold Ebiketie, or maybe, well, I don't know. Maybe D'Angelo Malone jumps out and starts doing some things. But if you can do that, I think this team really starts to round into a form. And I think it needs to start this week against Denver.
Look, a lot can change in a year. It did for Denver, right? Their defense, when it came to allowing points per game, they were 27th last season. They are 4th this year. So, hey, a lot can happen. Stay optimistic about the rest of the season. When we come back here, let's dive into the college football rankings and the latest with the Braves. Next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Well, Braves news coming last night, and there's been a lot of it lately, at least with last week with Braves. They declined catcher Travis d'Arnaud's team option. And yesterday, the Los Angeles Angels, I wanted to say Lakers there, they signed d'Arnaud to a two-year, $12 million contract. So, and of course, this comes on the heels of making a couple of other moves there. But how do you feel about this?
Well, I hate to see him go. This guy was a huge part of the World Series run and the postseason runs they've made the last few years and great season. I mean, this guy caught every pitch down the stretch in that World Series run that this team had. Chadwick Trump seems to be like the guy you might think would be the next guy up, but he's out of options. I think Drake Baldwin, who had a phenomenal season last year in a few different with Gwinnett and Mississippi, he's probably going to – we're probably going
to
see him at some point.
You have to.
I mean, maybe as early as May.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, Chadwick, just simply put, has been too bad offensively to think that he can plug a hole that, you know, Lil D's leaving. So it's – I don't know. They got to do something. I will give credit because we talked about this the other day, and I don't know if we had a caller or somebody tweet at us that was like, you know, do you think the Braves could bring him back on a two-year, $12 million deal? And I was like, yeah, I'm sure that he can probably get that, but I don't know that the Braves will get that depending on the pitching situation, and I think that's the other piece of the news.
Yeah, Charlie Morton is going to pitch next year. Obviously, the Braves are probably one of the three or four teams that live in a club that he's – that live in close capacity to, I think, in spring ball where he wants to be around. Is the Orioles are one of those teams in there as well. Mm. I think the Padres might be. I think it may be the Padres are in there. And also, the other day, they traded – I say the other day, it was like Monday, they traded for Nick Allen as a utility infielder. He's in
– good player.
He's in Oakland. He was in Oakland. Now he's good, but some of his stats aren't great, so that could be a move that we see on this roster, a guy that we see on this roster next year. So they've been willing and dealing, not major moves, Tiff, but some minor moves here and there.
And then in good news for this team, your boy Chris Sale, he was named an NL Cy Young finalist along with Paul Skenes and Zach Wheeler. So
if he doesn't win, I'm riding. Yeah, I'm right. I'm just going to put it that way.
Flipping tables?
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous.
The only thing that bothered me is the three finalists. Paul Skenes was one of them. And if you kind of look, and I think Paul Skenes was phenomenal, right? Flamethrower. Did he really have a better year than our other rookie? Swellenbach,
is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I could not.
I wasn't sure where
there's
you're
an
going
S in there somewhere.
Mr.
Swellenbach.
Going.
Thank
I
you, Tiffany. So it's in Swellenbach, yeah. And so I think when you look at all the numbers, and I don't think he did other than he threw really hard. So if Chris Sale doesn't win it, yes, Mike Johnson and I will be riding at the MLB Major League offices in New York.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're coming.
All right, let's get a check on college football. Hey, later on in the show, we do have CBS Sports Jerry Palm joining us. He's a college football writer, so we're excited to have him in our 8 o'clock hour. We can ask him all the questions that we're wondering about these college football playoff rankings now, with Oregon at 1, Ohio State 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana 5, BYU 6, Tennessee at 7, 8 Notre Dame, 9 Miami, 10 Ole Miss, 10 Alabama, 11 Ole Miss, and 12 is where Georgia is sitting after losing to the Rebels over the weekend.
I have some questions, and I think it's fine because I think the committee's always done this, right? They've always put out these polls and brackets and whatever else that will kind of play itself out. They've always done this. And I think they went a step too far.
A step too far in
terms of trying to set themselves up for later in the year. Because if that's not what they're doing, or simply maybe just overcorrecting from last week, then how does Indiana and BYU jump Tennessee? How does Indiana and BYU jump Tennessee after last week being behind Tennessee? Now, obviously, there's a couple of losses. Tennessee stays stagnant at 7, but you get Indiana, who barely slips past a, 5-5 Michigan, and BYU, who probably should have lost to Utah, that are jumping Tennessee. It's either an overcorrection or they are setting themselves up to simply say, hey, Tennessee, if you want to jump up and go win this weekend down in Athens.
Yeah.
I was trying to pull up the BYU schedule.
Well,
they're undefeated. But
they were undefeated last week. So then they were behind Tennessee last week. So I don't know what they did in this 1 week, set against Utah. And again, the same thing for Indiana. They're undefeated. What did they do to make them jump Tennessee in the past week?
Well, I think part of it is they're trying to set themselves up for what this may or may not look like. Because here's the thing you also got to look at. So Oregon would be one if it ended today, right? If everything ended today, Oregon would be one. BYU would probably be two. Because they're an undefeated power four.
You could definitely
champion.
Make that argument, yeah.
Miami would be in the mix in there. You got
to
look at
who's
the conference that I'm leaving out?
The SEC.
So then you would have Texas would be in there. So that would be your top four. What people are not talking about is if the college ball playoff started tomorrow, Georgia would not be in because Boise would be the non-Power nice. 5 conference champion that's the highest rated, and they would be in. And I'm talking with my hands with a pen in my hand,
yeah,
like
I'm
Jesse Palmer
yeah,
right
you
now.
You got a little hibachi thing going on.
But that's what's going to happen, Mike. So I think you're right. I think they're showing you what they wanted to make it look as real as they could with the fact that this is how it might play out.
Yeah. No, I think that's what they do. And they've set themselves up. But I think the biggest question is, and I'm not saying that I think this will happen, the biggest question is going to be simply, how do you rank the four SEC teams in the back end if Tennessee were to lose to Georgia this week? Because you can't simply say Tennessee's better than Georgia, but all these teams have beaten each other, aside from Alabama and Ole Miss, who have not played.
I
don't know where you rank any of them.
Well, with Tennessee just losing, and depending, and I know that Alabama's only playing Mercer, right?
Yes, the Mercer Bears.
Not sure how that ended up on their schedule.
They're 9-1. Don't disrespect
Mercer. I'm not sure how Mercer ended up on Alabama's schedule when Florida is playing LSU. Is it LSU this weekend, I think? Yeah, but cool.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Good for them. Not sure how you get Mercer
y'all.
When one team plays Georgia,
good
Texas, LSU, and then Ole Miss. But I'm not sure
Florida would beat Mercer right now.
Well, I mean, not with it. I'm not gonna do that to that poor kid. He's a walk-on. He's not. To our discussion yesterday, I'm not positive Aiden Warner is making NIL money, so he gets a pass. All right,
yeah. The Yale transfer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's getting a good education.
Poor kid. But I would, if to your point, I would probably move Tennessee. I would have to put Tennessee below Alabama simply for the fact of what they've done for me lately. And Alabama has a good win on the road, and Tennessee has a good loss on the road, but the wins are going to trumpet it. That's what I would do. Because I think Alabama is going to make it in probably by strength of schedule over Tennessee.
I don't know, man. I don't know how you can say that, and Georgia got a win on the road against Texas, who's beaten everybody else they've had. There's no good answer.
Well,
that's my point.
It's about game control, consistency. That's what they.
The Tennessee Alabama game make your eyes bleed.
They
go
told.
Back and watch it.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But they specifically told you last night that Georgia is at 12 right now because of A, they just lost, and B, they have been very inconsistent overall. And Georgia hasn't really trounced teams either.
No, not even close.
You use the word consistent. That also describes the Denver Broncos defense. That is a big concern for the Falcons as they get set to match up against Denver this weekend. We'll discuss when we come back here on the other side of the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. You strike me as a air guitar kind of kid.
I've played a couple air guitar solos in my life.
I'm more of an air drums kind of guy. You know, the steering wheel kind of thing going on. But
play the guitar on the steering wheel, you're like, meh.
Yeah. What does that look like?
Did I ever tell you guys I used to play drum set when I was in
school? No. I thought you played the clarinet or something.
Bro, come on. Don't try my gangster like that, man.
What are you talking about?
Didn't he play clarinet?
Bro, why are you trying my gangster like this? First of all,
do you really trust the fact that he's playing multiple instruments? I was
a true percussionist. Hold on. All right.
Hold on. I'll let you speak. Just give me a second. You know what I can see Dylan as? Is the guy in the marching band that hits that does the cymbals?
No, dude. That's disrespectful.
Wait.
Now that's disrespectful.
Depending on which marching band.
You did, didn't you?
I played snare drum.
You played the triangle?
In concert band, but that's another story. But one time, I forgot my drum because I played snare drum, so I had to play the cymbals. I forgot my drum, so I had to play the cymbals.
So you think the clarinet was disrespectful?
You know what I'm talking about? When you're in the marching band, they're doo-doo-doo.
Yeah,
the one guy just hits it every like
it's
third.
What is that? It's like a toy where they're hitting.
But I'll have you know, and when I was in jazz band too, I played the drum set and I loved it. But
Was Tiffany the lead singer in the jazz band? Yeah.
That's only when I run on got the raspiness. Sleep and get the little raspiness in my voice.
But I'll have you know, Mike Johnson, that I was actually voted the best, I think it was like best
cymbal man in the land?
No, best percussionist overall. By my band teachers my junior year because of my versatility. Thank you very much. So I could play everything. I could play bass drum, snare drum, triangle,
usually
man,
people
cymbals,
that play an instrument
bells.
Play more than one instrument.
Man, yeah, that's fine. Evidently, he did.
You're looking at him like, I doubt it. Like I told you I played three. Would you doubt that?
Yeah, I would. But I didn't play any, so.
So you were kind of like Whit Merrifield, Dylan. You could play third, second, short.
Jack of all trades.
Utility man.
Yeah, jack of all trades in the band. Yeah.
What'd you play?
I played, percussion. I was a percussionist, so I played bass drum, snare drum. I could play the xylophone, marimba, cymbals, triangle, all of it. All
right. I was piano, saxophone, and violin.
Oh, you had some nice ones.
I never stuck with them.
I was going to say, those sounds like lessons, not were you
in
a band?
Well, yeah, but still, I was in band. Second year.
You know what's funny is I was in it. I took band for 1 year in sixth grade, and I was like, yeah, I'll play the trumpet, and they're like, yeah, you're a drummer. You're not a trumpet player.
They didn't even. Oh wow.
I tried, and my teacher was like, yeah, I think you're tone deaf. You probably need to play the drums.
Can I honestly say that my parents probably saw me dance at a young age. Were like, no, that's not going to be his thing. Music. That's not going to be what this guy does.
Well, I only wanted to play the trumpet because I wanted my sister to play the drums. I didn't want to play the drums like my sister. And they were like, nah, you're tone deaf.
No thanks.
You got to go over there.
Sorry, but I feel you on that one, brother.
Okay. All right. Back on track here. Falcons, Broncos. We did talk a little bit about Bo Nix and the offense, but the biggest concern would be, and you rattled off a lot of stats there, Bo, would be this Broncos defense who have done a complete 180 from where they were last season. I know I noted the points per game earlier. They were ranked 27th in allowing almost the most points per game last year. This year, they're ranked fourth on their defense. So, and beyond that, you got into the sacks too, right?
Yeah, and to your point, Tiff, starting with this points per game allowed, they're virtually top 10 in every
category.
Top 5 in every category, honestly, that really major that matters, including fourth downs, which we've been really good at. But they have 35 sacks on the year, which is one under what New York has at 36, but makes them second in the NFL. But not just that. What really scares me, and we touched on it earlier, but what really scares me is their red area defense is phenomenal. And what have we done a lot of when we get in the red area is we make bad mistakes that put us behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
And I think you can't aid a team like this because they don't allow points already, and they're really good in the red area already. And if you get in the red area and, you know, have a, whether it was right or wrong, a clipping penalty, you're,
there's been a number of those, and then, just bad red area penalties this year for us.
And that's why the kicking game has been something that I've talked about. I'm not going to be a dead horse, but that's why I get worried with all those things.
Yeah,
it is a big concern. Coach Raheem Morris, he talked about, you know, you got to respect their defense.
I got so much respect, first of all, for Vance, Joseph, and what they've been able to do on defense. It's been fun to watch. But I got so much expectations for our offense and their ability to execute at a high level. I mean, Mooney to Bijan to Tyler Algier to Kyle Pitts to Drake London. We've all seen them do things at the highest level. And if we ever get them all going at the same time at a high level, Kirk Cousins back there, quarterback, and our O-line blocking the way they block at a high level, whether it be pass pro or run blocking, because they've shown both, right? We're going out and pass pro for 500-plus yards to be able to go out there and run it for almost two in two different games. So I got such a high level of confidence in us being able to go out there and find whatever we need to do that day, along with our coaches, and being able to orchestrate a game plan to go out there and to attack whatever weaknesses that they have on Denver and to find a way to get that thing to happen for us on Sundays and find ways to orchestrate wins no matter how it's going to happen. Like, we've done it, so I got a lot of confidence going out there and playing against other people.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, guys, is I've tried to lay off, and I want to ask y'all's opinion on this. I've tried to lay off this year using the term bad matchup, right? And I think in a lot of ways, probably people look at this and go, well, that's a bad matchup for the Falcons. I thought last week the Saints' running game against the Falcons' run defense was a bad matchup for the Falcons. And you look at the way that panned out, really Alvin Kamara in the running game was secondary, it felt like, last week. So, you know, it's all about game planning. It's all about personnel. It's all about kind of what you're focusing on and what you're paying attention to and really what you're able to get done and then executing that. Would you guys go down the road of maybe this is a bad matchup for the Falcons offense, I guess, is my next question.
Well, you could say that mainly because of how good they are up front. Yeah. And how they can get after you. They're good at they take away everything. And the thing that, you know, I think good quarterbacks, whether they're statues or not. I don't like to get locked in the, well, he's a statue in the pocket, so because they can get after it. To me, it all starts with, you know, getting separation early and or recognizing what they're bringing you. And Kirk Cousins against a team that liked to blitz a lot in Tampa, only threw for like almost 900 yards in two games and what, like 7 or 8 touchdowns. So
yeah.
The thing for me is can they get pressure without blitzing?
So you're expressing concern there over Kirk Cousins' mobility in the pocket, or were you talking about the opposite with?
Well, it's if they're blitzing, then I think we're in a good place. I think Kirk can rip you apart. But Tiff, what worries me is when with a guy like Kirk that can't move, when you can generate a pass rush with your front four and not have to send guys, and I haven't watched enough Denver. I haven't watched Denver yet. We just haven't got a chance to do it, and I know we're going to do it today and tomorrow. But when you can generate pass rush without sending a blitz, you can really, really hurt a team like Atlanta with a quarterback like Kirk Cousins.
I know it's different, but Mahomes was able to find Patrick Kelce a lot when Denver was blitzing.
And they got to him four times.
And they were able to get to him still, yeah.
Yeah, and so for me, Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate. The reason he's an X factor for any team he plays.
He can move.
And he can move.
And be accurate.
and he has a guy that knows the chemistry to every move. And that's what worries me is if they can get home without blitzing, we could be in for a long day. Because that you don't. They can drop 7, right?
Right.
They can play this coverage that it's going to be hard for guys to get open, and Kirk's going to have to be precise.
Well, and I think, look, the Falcons have to play their game in that aspect. I think that if you're going to tell, you know, Kirk he's going to drop back in the pocket 40 times and it's just going to be a 5-step drop and he's going to be uncorking it, that's not where the Falcons need to live. And they've fallen into that trap numerous times this year where Zach Robinson's kind of gotten comfortable because Kirk is so good at dissecting defenses. The problem is, and you saw it last week a few times, if anything kind of knocks him off of those reads, it seems like that's when teams kind of get home. If he can make the read immediately, dissect the defense, know where guys are coming from because he's so good at it, he can uncork the ball and he can make a good throw. The problem is that if, you know, a guy gets grabbed or a guy gets rerouted or, you know, something happens at the mesh point, you can get home on Kirk Cousins. So Zach Robinson has to stick to the game plan of we'll work some from under, we'll work some from pistol, we'll run our wide zone the way we have, but we'll also run play action and boot off of that and be able to hold some of these people, you know, kind of scare them out of the blitzes, if you will.
Well, I don't really feel like there's any defense or offense that doesn't have a weakness or a hole in it somewhere, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's kind of how that's just kind of the rule of thumb. Like there's no perfection. Since Raheem knows Vance, I mean, he knows Vance Joseph. The defensive coordinators have studied other defensive coordinators. I mean, that's kind of this how it is, how you get better. But he's also been on the offensive side. Is this one of those areas where Rock, and I'm sure he probably does it a lot, you could say this every week, but is this one of those areas where Rock kind of spends more time with Zach and says, Vance wants to do this, Vance likes this, because is this one of those moments where that really comes into play and he can help you find something to exploit?
I think it has to be, right? I think it has to be. Like, I think
see why it wouldn't happen.
And when we talk, when Raheem was hired and we talked about those scenarios, well, he's been on both sides of the ball. He can help on both sides of the ball. I would pay a lot of money to be a fly on the wall when Raheem walks into Zach Robinson's offenses and he's like, hey, did you see did you see that corner cat? Did you see the down and distance? Did you see this? I bet he's thinking, you know, that they can get home on this because, you know, this other team has been willing to boot out right. And dude, it just like I would pay to hear those conversations because I think you're spot on. I think there are things that Raheem can dissect on both sides of the ball that are really helpful and can help a Jimmy Lake. And look, Raheem's also faced off with Sean Payton.
Yeah.
I mean, has he not? Like, he's talking about two head coaches that have faced off against one another. So he knows, you know, kind of what Sean Payton's trying to get done. And I think this is going to be a matchup of personnel. And look, we already mentioned, is it a bad matchup? I don't go that route anymore because, it's, like I said, it's all about coaching and game plan. But, you know, Kareem Hunt was held to, you know, 30 rushing yards last week or whatever it is on 15 carries.
With all due respect, Kareem Hunt's not Bijan.
Look, you don't need to all due respect me. I completely agree. My point is that propping the numbers up of Denver, or did it get to a point where they were just like, man, we can't get this done? Because yeah, I agree with you, but, you know, Kareem Hunt's not Bijan, but Kansas City has a very good run-blocking offensive line, and we've seen that firsthand, what they're able to get accomplished with those guys in the middle with Trey Smith and company.
Yeah, agreed.
Some coaching changes, one of them affecting the team that the Falcons will play this weekend. We'll have an update on that, as well as who's on the outs in Chicago. We'll give you that latest NFL headlines when we come back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean.
So the Celtics will put it in with White. White fires it down low to Brown. Brown turns, shoots, gets it partially blocked, and the game's over. And the Atlanta Hawks, shorthanded as they are, they've come into Boston, and they have stunned the Celtics. And they win the first game of the tournament, the Emirates Cup tournament. The Hawks have won. They stunned the Celtics and their crowd. Final, Hawks 117, Celtics 116. Can you believe it, folks?
Well, boom, you heard it there from Steve Holman. Of course, we are
no, Steve, we can't.
For the Atlanta Hawks as they beat the Celtics, the defending two-time NBA champs. Hawks find a way to get it done, even without their superstar who's missing because he's injured, dealing with the Achilles
tendonitis.
Yeah. And Trae Young. So there's big win.
There's nothing better than a scorned Steve Holman call. And what I mean by that is like when he feels like, you know, when the Hawks are not given a chance and it's just like a write-off and everyone just is down on him and then the Hawks win. Because Steve is us. He's one of us, right? He's been with that organization for years and years and years. And so when people take shots or, you know, slide him a little bit, he takes homage to it. And I'm with him. You know how I am.
Yeah.
I love a chip on my shoulder. I love to be petty.
I know you do. It was just awesome last night watching Onyeka. Obviously a great night for him. Jalen Johnson, the triple-double. Dyson Daniels, to me, story of the night. He had a career high in points. Also doing a lot of the ball handling duties. You mentioned earlier Quinn Snyder kind of saying it's like having your top three quarterbacks out because really nobody to be able to handle the ball that, you know, would feel comfortable in that situation. But Dyson Daniels goes all the way back to his, you know, some of his previous stints where he's had to run point and do different things. I thought he played an incredible game last night. He's just so good defensively, so active, and that had a lot to do with it. The Hawks also, I don't want to get this stat right because I saw it last night, I think 20 more shooting possessions than the Boston Celtics. And when Boston shoots as well as they do, because let's be honest, they shoot lights out almost every time they take the floor, you have to be able to steal possessions, get offensive boards, you know, be able to score in transition. And having 20 more shooting possessions is what led this team to victory. And so when Dyson Daniels is playing defense, Onyeka's crashing the boards and you're doing all those things, that's what can lead to a to an upset as a 16-point underdog. And it's exactly what you got last night.
Let's get the latest on the NFL. Well, this news dealing with the Denver Broncos, who the Falcons will take on this weekend, it's concerning news. Their assistant head coach, Mike Westhoff, has stepped down to deal with potential health issues. This according to NFL insider Tom Pelissero. He experienced some issues related to his vision last week and underwent MRI testing on Monday. And so after consulting with doctors and, of course, speaking with head coach Sean Payton, he made the decision to go to his home, which is in Florida. So he has 33 years of coaching experience in the NFL. He's in his second year being the assistant head coach for the Broncos. And he was with Sean Payton, by the way, from 2017 to 2018 with the Saints. So.
Yeah. An incredible dude. I think he was part of some of those Don Shula staffs down in Miami for a long time. He's been around for forever in NFL circles. And look, you know, your health is first and foremost. And anytime you have somebody that has to step away for that, you obviously respect that and the decision they have to make, because you know it's not easy. When you've been a football lifer like that, it's never easy to step away from those locker rooms. And hopefully that Coach Westhoff can go out there and get that situated.
On to news up north with the Chicago Bears. They did make a change, as their head coach Matt Eberflus said. Change was going to come with that offense. They fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, and now Thomas Brown will take over play-calling duties for the Bears. This is according to CBS Sports NFL insider Jonathan Jones.
Yeah, they've been really bad.
Really bad.
I don't like the move, I'm not going to lie. I like stability for young players, and especially young quarterbacks. And whether it's bad or not, I think maybe you try to ride this out. It just had, unless Caleb Williams was like, this guy won't work with me, he's not doing what I want. Maybe that's what, maybe, you know, you never know what's going on in the building, but it just, you don't want to see him go through what guys like Trevor Lawrence and what Bryce Young just went through. And that is seemingly not the same, obviously, because Urban Meyer was a debacle.
Yeah.
The Tepper Reich relationship was a debacle. But there's
probably Bear fans that would tell you Matt Eberflus has been a debacle. Well, so he has to own a little bit of that as well.
Shane Waldron looks like a debacle now. But yeah. I just don't like this instability for a young player, because let's get to the reality of this. This is a desperation move by Eberflus.
I agree. Well, I think it's the entire organization. And the question you have to ask yourself is, what role did Waldron play in having Caleb Williams drafted and all the above? Because you've seen whispers that there's players unhappy with Caleb Williams too. And I have to think it's probably DJ Moore or, you know, Keenan Allen or whoever else inside of that offense that are not getting the ball the way they're used to. And so, I don't know. It's frustrating, but I keep coming back to this. And I've said this before on the show, and I believe it even more now. The offensive coordinator or the offensive play caller is the most important. They might be the most important person in the locker room aside from the quarterback. Like that is such an important position, to your point about the development of a young quarterback. When you have a talent the way Caleb Williams is, not the defensive coordinators take a back seat or any other player on the team, but that coordinator and that quarterback have to be lockstep. And if the relationship's not there and you don't think it's getting any better, you're early in his career, I don't mind the move. I mean, I'm never in favor of firing coaches, but when you look at the way they've performed here recently, it seems like you have enough talent to be able to, you know, put more points on the board. And this is a league where if you're not coaching or playing up to that ability, then you're going to be you're going to have to move on eventually. So I don't mind it as much as some others, but it's unfortunate nonetheless.
I think it's more of a concern if you see what happens with this team next year. So if there's a change now, someone else stepping in, and then all of a sudden there's a new OC midway next year, or anything like that, then it becomes a concern. But I don't have a problem with it being making the change right now this early, because he's just, I mean, you know, I know it's just one season, but he's just getting started. And it's still, what, his rookie year. So.
Yeah, and he might have a new head coach at the end of the year,
and
too.
And, you know.
Yeah,
so,
that'd be the next move.
So when it comes to the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, our owner, said on 105.3 The Fan that Dak Prescott will undergo surgery in New York today on the partial avulsion of his hamstring, or if we want to just make it simplified, tore his hamstring.
Well, an avulsion, but do you know the actual definition of an avulsion fracture? It's where the ligament rips a chip of the bone off.
That's what they're saying. Wow. He ripped off the bone.
Yeah. Wow. So I had an avulsion fracture in this thumb playing in a 3-piece suit football, also for Pester Vest. I know it. I know.
You clarified 3-piece.
Actually, it was this finger. And it what happened was is when
how'd you get the wrong finger?
Well, it was because I had this hand in there because that was. But anyways, when it happens. Oof. It is a tendon rips off. It just chips the bone as it goes.
So that's horrible. The positive in it is that Jones said that Dak's prognosis is wonderful. It just means we're not going to have him for the rest of the year. Obviously,
wonderful is such a strange word for Jerry Jones, right there. Like when I saw wonderful, I was like, did he really say wonderful? Wonderful prognosis for the future.
Well,
sure. Yeah, the prognosis is good that he'll return and play good football.
You got to talk to Jerry. You know, he's like, well, you know, there's a wonderful prognosis for him in the future. And then he talked about glory holes and everything.
Strange choice of words.
He's an odd duck, man. He's an old school dude that maybe he's lost his fastball a long time ago.
Maybe he has. I don't know. It's wonderful is a strange way to put it. But I guess if you're paying the guy $60 million a year, wonderful might be my choice of words, too, if the guy's making $60 million a year off me.
Well, I've got the Raiders at Dolphins this weekend, so I'll be in Miami. And I was paying attention to the Monday Night Football game, obviously, in which the Dolphins did win. And so I was going to at least point out, watching that game, I'm sure a lot of people might have had the same reaction when Tua did go in to make a tackle. He did go on to let everybody know he wasn't planning on using his head to try to make that tackle post-interception. But again, Dolphins now. Bouncing back, finding a way to win with their quarterback, and we'll see how it plays out this weekend. But I'll be meeting with them on Friday.
Yeah, tell Tua, I said, what's up, man? My favorite college football player of all time, Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah,
hopefully he can stay healthy.
I'm interested in how some of the guys. Because is it James Lofton with you this?
No, I'm with Jay Feely, Ross Tucker,
Ross
and
Tucker,
Tom McCarthy,
Ross Tucker,
yeah.
I'm curious if Ross asked Tua kind of, you know, stuff about, you know, what came into the decision to come back. And Tua
he sat down with Jeff Darlington. He did on Monday Night Football. It was his first long form.
I didn't get a chance to see that.
It was really informative. Basically said retiring never crossed his mind. Mm-hmm. He talked about it with his family, but was very adamant that he does not want to be known as the poster child or poster boy for concussions.
Yeah, that's tough. I am pulling for him.
Don't blame him for that.
I think everybody is, honestly.
So I'm looking forward to that this weekend, and I'll be obviously keeping an eye on things with you guys back here. But I'll still be here tomorrow before, you know, try to enjoy some beach time before meetings.
Well, you know, today's Wednesday, right?
Today, I know. I think that's why I was speeding up. I didn't get my head because I was like, you know what? I can see some water.
There you go.
See
always
some beautiful
good.
Sand. This hour brought to you by Zero Smart, Last and Clean. What you got for
Michael? Wow! It's Which One Wednesday. You know what time it is. Tiff, you make sure you hold that trophy up loud and proud because
why
I won it last week. Well, you know, listen, I don't want to pin mic'd up on you every single Wednesday, so it is what it is. We're going to get back to work, and Tiff against Bo. I'll give you one going to the break. How about this? Mike Tyson. Would you rather, if you're going back to the late 80s, would you rather go to a Mike Tyson fight or a Michael Jackson concert? That's Which One Wednesday, coming up on the other side. Mic'd up on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Oh, and what a beautiful Which One Wednesday it is. You guys know the drill. I throw out the scenario or the decision to be made. Tiffany and Bo will, debate style, give us their answers on that decision to be made. And then Dylan will judge the debate and who was able to win. If you weren't here last week, I held the crown. I held Bo off as Tiffany hosted Which One Wednesday. Held the fort down. I look for Tiffany to once again be able to do the same thing. And stiff arm Bo back into oblivion on Which One Wednesday like I did last week.
You know you live in people's heads when their only goal is to beat you or talk about you.
Is that what it is? Well, there was only two people competing last week. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, well, you clearly made it your goal.
All righty, Bo.
Your goal. Y'all's goal is to beat me. It takes two of you.
Well, look, you were the defending champ, so hats off to you for that. You had, you know, put together a series of victories, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I put
actually,
a cap on that.
I should point out, it's not just two against one. Usually you have Dylan in your back pocket. So
That's
apparently,
a great
I haven't
point.
Had him in my back pocket lately.
That's actually a great point.
Dylan, are you going to take that?
Sorry, I am fair and just. Well, and just to let you know, if you want there to be a little bit of, you know, favoritism towards one person, I'll watch how you speak to me.
Just make it clear.
He also said his Venmo is open.
Make you know, it clear.
Yeah, I do take bribes.
You want me to scan it?
Dylan?
A free TV from somebody or something. I don't know.
Well, hopefully it works this time. Just notice who who's slandering you.
What? It's been noted.
Just keep
he's
it
always, He always got to cap his, you know, my joke with his joke. All right, well, so let's go. Bo was
Made
talking about the
upsizing.
You good? You done? All right. Bo was talking about the critter in his attic last night. Had to call somebody, get some repairs, get some things closed off. And then he mentioned that guy had just dealt with a snake issue at a different house. My question to you, if you were going to climb into your attic, which one would you rather find? Would it be a rat or would it be a snake? Which one would you rather find?
A snake.
Not which one is worse. Which one would you rather find? A rat or a snake? Tiff, we'll start with you.
A snake, hands down, a snake. They don't multiply as fast as rats do. So I would think that, why are you looking at me so bizarre? I'd rather have a snake up there. It's probably a one-time removal. If they've laid some eggs, you can get those out too. But I feel like rats are building. Rats are so intelligent. It's probably built a whole system. I think I told you guys
about that Nat Geo thing that I looked at.
I'm not saying snakes are stupid. But rats actually have a whole communication system. They're quite fascinating. I feel like they could probably take over your home quite easily. Than a snake could.
I'm going to make this simple. First off, the last thing I want in my house is an animal with a forked tongue. All right?
Oh, dude.
Ugh. And let me tell you something. Rats don't get into bed with you. Rats don't crawl up your toilet while you're sitting there taking a number two and bite you in the butt.
That cereal you like to have, you're going to find a rat dropping in it.
Have it. You can have the cereal. I don't like snakes. If I find a snake in my house,
I don't like being in the same zip code as a snake.
My house will either be one or two things. It will be on the market or it will be on fire. Okay? Snakes are evil creatures.
No, they're not.
Rats. I can deal with rats. I can talk to them. I can get rid of them. I can trap them. You ain't trapping no damn
rats
snake.
Rats are going to multiply.
No way. You don't think snakes don't?
They do, but I'm saying a rat, I think it's going to multiply
I'm
going to double check
And
that.
If you find the right rat, you can teach it how to cook.
Okay. You actually can. They actually are.
Right. No, you did not just do the ratatouille. No, you did not just hit us with a ratatouille. All right, you are on restriction for the rest of this Which One Wednesday.
He's watching Disney movies.
We got to move on. I can't get my kid to watch Ratatouille, speaking of which. All right, we got to move on. How about this one? Denzel comes out the other day. He's on his tour for promoting Gladiator 2, and he says that he will be a part of Black Panther 3. So which sequel with Denzel in it excites you more? Would it be Gladiator 2 or would it be Black Panther 3? Gladiator 2 opening up just over a week from now, I believe. All right?
Wasn't this like the 20th or 25th anniversary of like Gladiator not that long ago?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
It came out in the summer of 2000 because I remember seeing it. So this would be
there you go. Yeah, we're getting close. So we'll start with you.
Don't come for me, but just based on the nostalgia, the history of Gladiator, it was like a staple. I can't tell you how many times I watched that back then. Even if it comes on TV right now, you're probably likely to watch it.
Yeah.
And I don't really quote a lot of movies, but I can probably name a couple like lines from that. So Gladiator, I feel like, is a classic. And to have Denzel Washington be a part of it.
Yeah.
And his acting skill, I think it will take it to another level.
He said he's being very selective these days.
He is, because he's going to retire soon.
I love it, man. I love it. He deserves it.
But also, they wrote Ryan Coogler. They wrote him into Black Panther. As you know, he's going to retire. So he's going out. It's a tough decision, but I will go Gladiator.
But what do you think?
As a huge, massive Denzel Washington fan and a Gladiator fan, the only thing that I have an issue with this new Gladiator movie is so far, everything I've read and seen, it looks very much like the first Gladiator, like almost a carbon copy. Nothing would be cooler than seeing Denzel Washington playing like a bad guy in Black Panther, right? Because bad guy Denzel. That's the best Denzel, other than Man on Fire Denzel and Coach Boone from Remember the Titans Denzel. But bad guy Denzel is the best, so I want to see him in Black Panther.
All right, we got to move on. I asked it going to break.
I'm hoping.
If you could go back to 1987, 88, which one would you rather see? Do you want to see Mike Tyson in his prime in a boxing match or Michael Jackson on his world tour, maybe at like Wembley Stadium? Yeah, hit that thing, Dylan. Which one would you rather see? Go back to the late 80s, put yourself in those shoes. Mike Tyson, Michael Jackson. Which one, Tiff?
I guess I'm going to go to the vibes of a concert. And why would you not want to see the moonwalk up close, depending on what section you're in, you know? But I'd probably pull some strings and be in the front row.
That was a subtle drop right there. I like it.
You know, I'm just saying I would probably rather the classics, the hits. I'm going to pick a concert over a fight probably.
All right, Bo. Up to you, man.
Well, I've been to quite a few championship fights, but nothing would have been cooler than 1987 seeing the baddest man on the planet.
Tyson in his prime.
And the vibes. I'm going to tell you something. The stars that show up. You got Jack Nicholson sitting front row. Don King's hair is in the building. I mean, give me the baddest man on the planet. He comes out wearing the black towel with the, you can't see the socks and the boots. Give me that all day long. A championship fight, man. The atmosphere is unbelievable.
All right. Dylan says we got time for one more, and here's what we're going to do. Which guy is more important to the Falcons' success for the rest of the season? Is it Darnell Mooney, who has proved himself to be explosive at wide receiver? Or is it Grady Jarrett, your team's leading sack leader right now with 2.5?
I'm going to take this one, and I'm going to try to keep it short because I do want to get into my facts about snakes and rats that I just pulled up here. With Grady Jarrett, I know, yes, he leads the team with 2.5 sacks, but he is the heartbeat still of that defense, right? The heart and soul of that defense. And if we're talking about the defense, turning things around, getting some more sacks on the season, you got to have your leader with you. So I feel like he is extremely important to this defense.
I think that's fair. What do you think, Bo?
I think that's a phenomenal point. I'm not going to argue any of those because, that's phenomenal. But I'm just going to go to bat for Darnell Mooney. He is the leading receiver as far as yards go. He is second in touchdown receptions on this team. This dude is a playmaker. He is the big play threat on
this
team. He is the big play threat. All right. And they don't win games without guys like Darnell Mooney. The defense lets us down at times. The kicking game has let us down at times. Darnell Mooney has only let us down once with a drop, and he made up for it later in the game. Darnell, man.
Can I make one point before we go? While Bo is cheering for Darnell Mooney in his house that is riddled with rats, because female rats can give birth, I think have up to 12 pups every 3 weeks.
I'm sorry. You say 12 every 3 weeks?
12 pups is what they're called.
So you're just going to average 4 kids a week?
3 weeks. For me and the snakes that I will be dealing with, a female snake may give birth once or twice a year.
How many snakes come out of that female?
Let me throw this out there. I'm just going to tell you all, if I find a snake in my bed, I am literally immediately putting it on the market. Dylan, what say you?
Well, I'm going to say it was very close, and I was swayed one way before Tiffany gave those final facts, but the extra effort from Tiffany, it's got me feeling like Tiffany.
You can't come back.
It's a walk-off win at the bottom of the night.
That is illegal.
It's a walk-off win at the bottom of the night.
I get no rebuttal. And by the way, she didn't even tell you how many.
You did rebuttal.
She came back over the top. How many snakes does a female snake? How many babies does a female snake have? Because that could be an X factor. That's garbage, man. You can't come. I'm protesting. Get Day Day in here. Okay. I'm protesting.
I make the rules.
It can
I'm the final
from
judge.
Say the number. Say the number. Say the. Hold on. Say this.
I am going to tell you is that. Hey,
say
when
it.
We come back.
No.
Here,
say the.
No. You can't do that.
That's not fair.
You got to give the number, Tiff.
It can range from 1 or 2 to over 100.
Oh,
baby snakes at once. Baby snakes at once.
Well, as the final judge,
you can't take it back now. But man, we were had. We were had,
and I will find that out.
We were had.
Yeah, Bo actually might have been cheating. I'm sorry, Bo.
We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift Wake Up Calls. Next call is 404-726-0929. 8:29. We'll be back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 8 o'clock hour and is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call, 404-726-0929. You can call us. You can tweet at the show. You can tweet at Mike on X, which we will get to a couple of those first.
Yeah.
And if you want to weigh in, I want to do this first.
All right.
My brain got scrambled here. I have a wake-up call to issue to all of you. I did win Which One Wednesday because do you know how many offspring a pair of rats can have in a year?
Judging by your math, I'm going to go somewhere in the 100
range. Is it more than
range.
200 snakes?
It is more than 200 snakes in a year.
Yeah, but you're going to get rid of the rats.
2,000 in a year.
Did you say 2,000?
A pair of rats can produce up to 2,000 offspring in a year. In a year.
Are these country rats or city rats?
First of all, neither one
rats?
Of them are good. Okay, neither one of them are good. Let's just leave it at that.
There's a difference. I'm sure those city rats reproduce more.
Got a couple good tweets. Tiffany, you mentioned it. If you want to get at us at 929 Morning Shift, you can hit us up. Our buddy Big Speaker says, hear me out. He's talking about Grady Jarrett. We've changed edge players, coordinators, head coaches to try to improve the pass rush. The one constant in Grady, he's not the same as he once was. And he said also literally forgot David Onyemata was on the team. David Onyemata has not produced the way he did last year, that's for sure. Our four-fingered buddy, Jake Major, he said he's talking about Bo's evulsion. He said, did poor Squid hurt his whittle thumb? And then, of course, shows a picture of his four fingers. Shout out to Jake for always being funny about that.
It was the pointing finger.
Your index finger?
Yeah,
the
your index finger.
The index. Terrence Fowler, used the point, though.
Terrence Fowler says, hard one, but I'm going to go with Michael Jackson concert. Mr. Yo kind of feeling the same way. He said, Tyson in his prime, one of the biggest wastes of money I've ever experienced. You pay for the pay-per-view, and the fight was only 3 minutes long at
that's,
best.
That's
pretty good point.
The point, yep. though. Yeah, but that,
I
that's
brought that
a championship
up.
Fight. There's multiple fights. You're there.
Yeah.
I mean,
good point,
I'm gonna
Mr.
Say
Yo.
Something. Being at a championship fight is that I've been lucky enough to be at a few, and
I've been at a couple myself.
I was there when Marquez knocked Pacquiao out, and
yeah, I've been to a Pacquiao fight too.
I thought I was fearful,
and
with the way Pacquiao fell,
I was fearful.
Seriously, Mike Bell and I were sitting next to each other, and we both stood up as he goes into the ropes and just is limp, and I said, I hope he gets up.
Yeah, I'd believe it.
Like it was scary when he went down, and because Pacquiao, by the way,
ding,
is winning that fight and had won the round, and he just got a little aggressive at the end.
I went to Pacquiao in Cowboys Stadium, and the sunlight was not an issue. So I'll just
was that the Michael Bradley fight?
Yeah, I think
clarify.
So. Yeah.
We got Cameron in Kennesaw. Good morning, Cameron.
What up, morning guys?
What's up, Cam?
Nothing much. I don't know. I almost forgot everything I was going to say to y'all. What was I about to say? Oh, Bo, sorry that you had to take the L. You know, it is what it is. You can't really be asking for a victory when you don't even present your final fact. Good job, Tiffany. W victory.
What are you talking about? I gave all my facts, and she gave, like, final facts that I didn't know we had closing arguments. I didn't realize that we had closing arguments,
brother.
Cameron.
Brother, I'm just saying you can't ask to win the debate if you're asking your opponent to present your final facts on the snake baby. And I wanted to finish off on y'all have a beautiful Wednesday, a beautiful fall, and it's a beautiful day to be a part of the Mafia.
Oh, wait.
Okay. Hold on. Now we know where in lies the rub.
Well, he just said sorry for partying is what
but
he said, basically. That's what he said.
Here's the problem. I was not told that the judge was allowing final arguments. Because the judge was crooked today.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's why he's a cymbal player.
Shots fired through the glass.
I mean, I understand you're a little upset right now.
Because she took shots at you at the beginning, and then you allowed her a leeway that no one else on the panel got. So, yeah, you.
Cam sounded like he was fine with it. He said you should have your facts lined up.
Yeah,
that's
because Cam's a mafia.
Yeah, well.
Mafioso.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Next
all right.
time, Bo, you can jump in there and have a closing argument.
Well, apparently, I did not know they were a thing.
Little fingers were going a million miles an hour over there when you talked about Darnell Mooney.
Let me tell you something. No, I just flipped over my card. Let me tell you something. You're one to call because you cried wolf when I picked an over under in a forced game that we have to pick. And you said, that's not the rule.
That wasn't the rule.
You still
Sorry.
Bring it up. That's not a. Well, what was that?
Don't cheat. Nice. Nobody
Whatever.
Said that wasn't a rule.
What
Cheater
it's called
over here.
Is you lost. Okay, so let's go.
Snake King.
This might make you
Queen.
Feel better. I think this is one of your people. Tinker in Kennesaw?
Yeah, that's my boy.
See, I tried to convert Tink a couple weeks ago. It's all right, though, Tink.
You leave Tink alone.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, anybody says they're at work, they're full of it, because I'm sitting in the sea of red lights.
That's a good
price.
They ain't made it yet, huh?
Oh,
they're
man.
Pulling me. But, I'm just kidding.
But the wake-up call is I love it because I see them all the time around the units up under the pads, and I love it when the homeowner's with me. Because I'll just calmly bend down and grab Mr. Jake the Snake and walk him to the tree line, and I turn back, and the homeowner's usually running around going, and the other little fact you forgot is them snakes eat them rats.
Yep.
There you go. Hey,
they're making a lot of everything out.
Yeah, doing the Lord's work, I think.
I mean, I don't think the devil is doing the Lord's work.
Tink, do you deal with rats, too? Can Bo call you next time he needs a critter getter? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, Tink, maybe that's who you need to call next time. You need
By the way, I think Tink was a little off. He was Jake the Snake, and he was grabbing Damien.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Remember the snake? Remember when Jake the Snake would beat you? He would do the DDT, and then you'd be out, and he'd pull the bag up, and he would pull out that big python.
Oh,
ooh, boy. Ugh.
Let's go to Will in Mike's Mafia. Good morning, Will.
Oh, yes, sir. Let's go.
What's going on?
Mike Mafia.
Well,
welcome to the show, Will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hang on. I'm going to backbow the rat whisper here in just a minute, but we got Medusa Blackman over here trying to, like, seduce everyone with facts and, like, try to win.
When look, you'll turn to stone.
Yo.
There you go.
But I'm going to back Bo the rat, you know, this rat whisperer guy, because he can talk to rats. No, Bo won that one hands down, first and foremost. Uh-oh. So okay.
You're not even backing it up. You don't even present any facts, but go on.
I don't have to back it up. Rats are gross. Snakes are cool.
No. He said he'd rather have rats.
I don't like either one, man.
Me too.
I'm good.
No, I don't. Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather have a rat, but I don't like snakes. But snakes are cool. I don't want snakes.
Yeah, touche. Touche, man.
All right, fair enough. Hey, thank you. We got your
keychain.
Yeah.
That's a bottle opener.
Cool stuff. Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. So, but my real wake up call is for the Hawks. They just need to find some way to keep winning. I don't know. Maybe trade some players. Keep that big three together with Double J, Double O, Trey. Oh, actually, Big Four, and then Rishishev. Wait, let's find some way to find a real big man to complement those four, and let's just see where we go from there. But other than that. Mafia is out.
Blam, blam, blam.
You know,
I'll push back on that. Will Onyeka played extremely well last night. He's one of the reasons they won. Can
we nickname Dyson Double D?
A Double D. I like
we got
that.
A Double O and a Double D. We're stacked.
And a Double J. Look, man, it is what it is.
Oh, Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Remember him? With the guitar, he used to hit you with a guitar.
No, man, they all played so well last night, and they had to. They needed everybody to play well last night if they were going to pull that one off against the Celtics. Just one of the crazier upsets you've seen probably in the NBA, definitely in the NBA this season, if not in the last few years.
Did you know the guitars they use to hit you with in wrestling are not like regular ones? They're a little.
I believe that.
Yeah, they're more proppy. They're a little bit thinner. They're hollowed out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's almost like the rusty barbed wire is not that sharp.
I watched a video online one day about wrestling props.
Yeah, be careful with that.
It was about wrestling props, man.
It's a dark hole.
Oh, what, wrestling prop videos?
No, the internet.
Oh, well, I don't. Yeah. I normally stay on Twitter.
Can I give a shout out to my dog this morning?
Uh-oh.
I did not set an alarm last night, y'all.
Oh, did he wake you up?
And he saved the day.
Saved the day, give you a little nudge.
Hey, you're going to be late.
Actually, I looked, I said, go back to bed. And I heard him go back, and then I said, maybe I should look at the clock. That's what I'm hitting. I was like, great job. So
Roman for the win.
I need the wake up call. So
did Roman get a treat before you left for waking you up?
Sparingly, because there's some other issues.
Ah, I got you.
We don't want to hear about on this show. So.
Oh, Roman, anyway, I feel well.
Poor Roman.
Anyway, college football playoff rankings have dropped. There's been a lot of movement, and this is the perfect day to have in college football writer for CBS Sports, Jerry Palm. Join us here on the show. That is next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. College football writer for CBS Sports, Jerry Palm, joining us here on the show. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Good. It's even better to have you with us on the heels of the college football playoff rankings being dropped last night. I guess the simple question is, we have a lot of Dogs fans here in Atlanta and in the Georgia area. They're ranked 12th. Are you okay with how this all played out? Do you think the committee got it right?
Yeah, I think Georgia's where they should be, you know, based on what they've done so far this season and what everybody else has done, because rankings are relative. You know, they've played the toughest schedule of anybody. Alabama's not too far behind them. But, you know, and they seem to have most of their tough games on the road so far. But it's, you know, it's been a real challenge for them. But they are where they should be, and they still have a chance to do everything they set out to do this season. But if they lose to Tennessee, then they don't. They'll be out of playoff contention. So, you know, now that they're getting one of these great opponents at home, they need to take advantage of that.
Jerry, I want to go, you know, obviously to the rankings, but one of the things I want to focus on, and there's always been conversation about Big Ten, SEC, Michigan, obviously won a national title last year, and the strength that has been the SEC for years before that. You kind of mentioned it in your, you know, in your article about the poll that, you know, the Big Ten's got four of the top five teams. Do you think that speaks more to the strength of the Big Ten, or do you think that speaks more to the parity that has found itself in this 16-team SEC?
It's a little bit of both. It's really more the strength of the top of the Big Ten, because there are no other Big Ten teams in the rankings.
Yeah.
So there appears to be a sizable gap between those four and everyone else. And I think it also has to do in part with just how hard it is, you know, to get equitable schedules now in these leagues when they're so big. You know, you're only playing half the other teams in your league now in a football season, and you just end up with some really disparate schedules. You know, like Indiana hasn't played a soul. They have their 10 games into their season, and none of their first 10 opponents are bowl eligible yet. Of course, they have Ohio State next week, but then they finish with Purdue, which probably won't have two wins this year. So, you know, Indiana got a schedule that's just as soft as you could ever hope for. You would be hard-pressed to try to create a softer schedule if that was your goal.
Wow.
On the other hand, you have Purdue. Purdue's going to play all four of those teams by the end of the season. They've already played two. All four of those top five teams, plus Illinois, who's probably going to be in the rankings at the end of the year or certainly in that neighborhood, and on non-conference play, Notre Dame. So Purdue's already played three of the top 10 teams in the rankings that have two more coming. So it's but that's, you know, that's just because you don't have much overlap anymore with the conference schedules. And so the committee really has their hands full sorting through these teams, because even teams within the same conference, and you think, well, all SEC schedules are going to be pretty good. Well, no, not necessarily. And all Big Ten schedules are going to be pretty good, but, you know, not necessarily. Oh, and those four Big Ten teams at the top, Ohio State is playing each of the other three, but those other three aren't playing each other at all.
Mm. Well, Jerry, let me ask you this then about, since you gave some phenomenal points about Indiana, then how is Indiana at five with no good wins, but SMU is all the way at 14? I know they have a loss, but it was against BYU. What, second
also
week?
Also behind Indiana, by the way. BYU.
Yeah. So another good point. So how is SMU so far down, and Indiana is getting so much love, but SMU, and to your point, BYU is not getting equal love when they've done everything, if not more, in some ways.
Oh, yeah. They played a better schedule. They have quality wins. They beat Kansas State, which is in the rankings. They handed SMU their only loss. I think it's hard to really justify BYU behind Indiana just based on, you know, the metric type of things. But it's a subjective process. So you've got all this objective data, but IU has taken a really bad schedule and annihilated everybody on that schedule until they played Michigan last week. And then that was their first competitive game. And I think the committee is looking at this and saying, well, yeah, that schedule really stinks, but they are a lot better than that schedule, and that must be what is working for them. And that's part of the subjectivity of this. You know, they're not, you know, if it was as easy as just going with data, you wouldn't need a committee. You could just have computers spit it out.
Right. Jerry, I want to follow up on that just a little bit. This kind of goes along with what you're saying, but we've talked to Tennessee fans that are kind of upset that they stayed stagnant when it seems like their wins were equal to what Indiana and BYU were over the weekend, and Indiana and BYU jumped Tennessee. And I know that this is a tough question to answer, but there's been times in the past where it feels like the committee is simply saying, hey, go out and win this weekend. Hey, go out and win next weekend. Tennessee, obviously the showdown against Georgia. Do you think it's simply the committee just being comfortable saying, hey, look, we're just going to leave you at 7, but if you go out and deal with business this weekend, you'll be right back where you expected to be?
I don't think their committee looks ahead. They're really just looking at what you've done so far, week to week. I don't think they're looking ahead. In fact, I know that they're protocol would say we're not looking ahead. So, you know, Tennessee got jumped by undefeated teams. Tennessee should probably be behind undefeated teams. You know, their loss is Arkansas. That's not really a great loss compared especially to some of the teams that they're competing with up there who, when they do lose, are losing to pretty good teams for the most part. So I don't really have a problem where Tennessee is. Tennessee is well-positioned again, to accomplish everything they want to accomplish this year. You know, being number 7 is not hurting them at all. They can still win the league. They can still get a bye. There isn't anything standing in Tennessee's way of doing what they want to do being number 7 this week.
So you say the committee doesn't look ahead, and I know that you've been able to, in the past, be a part of some of the mock committee things that they've done. What 100% are they looking at? Because I know they came out and said that, well, Georgia has been inconsistent on offense, and they kind of gave some outliers of why Georgia was all the way at 12. But knowing if at the end of the day Georgia wouldn't be in, like, because of, you know, you don't have a power non-power 5 or power 4 now. I still get that mixed up,
right,
champion.
Yeah.
But what exactly is some of these protocols that they are looking at that have determined why Georgia's 12 and Miami's still at 9, having played nobody and having no game control in most of their games?
Yeah, game control. Yeah, there's a thing. What difference does it make how you get to the win as long as you get to the win? The score usually tells you how well you've controlled the game. Yeah, Miami likes to play with their food, and this time the food bit them. But that's part of the subjectivity of it, though. You know, you've got a lot of coaches and former players in that room that are watching these teams play and are making subjective evaluations of how good they are. And then you've got this data to support all of that. So Georgia's played a ridiculous schedule, and they've kind of been punished by it, the schedule, not by the committee, but punished by the schedule a little bit. And it's reflected in where the committee – you know, have these teams. But one of the things that the committee really tries to respect is head-to-head results when they can. So, and when it makes sense to. For example, you know, Texas lost to Georgia, but Texas is 7-1 and Georgia's 6-2 or 7-2. So, you know, they're not going to be ahead of Texas. But all those 2-loss teams, you know, Alabama beat Georgia, so they're ahead of Georgia. Mississippi beat Georgia, so Mississippi's ahead of Georgia. So part of the reason why Georgia's 12 is that 2 of their conference mates are ahead of them. The 2 that beat them are ahead of them. And so, you know, if you had different names on the jerseys, you know, if Georgia had done what Alabama had done, Georgia would be in Alabama's place. So it's not really – some of it is sort of an internal ranking of the teams within the conference because of the head-to-head results, and not all head-to-head results are conference games. But – you know, they do try to respect that. There are 27 games played so far between the teams that are in the current top 25, and 23 of those, the team that is now higher ranked won that game. Yeah. And for 3 of the other 4, the team that lost the game has a better record now than the team that beat them, and that's why they're ahead. And the only one that doesn't really jive is that LSU went into South Carolina and beat them. And South Carolina is 21 and LSU is 22, and they have the same record. So that one doesn't make sense. I don't know why they came to that conclusion. But, you know, head-to-head result is something that they really respect, and that's part of why Georgia's where they are.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Jerry, because I have got a great question for you. Tennessee and Georgia obviously facing off this weekend. You've got Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia at 10, 11, and 12. I'm not ready to say that this is going to happen. This is not what my projection is, but let's just say that Georgia beats Tennessee. What you just said as far as having the same record, the same amount of losses, it will be hard to do. Having Tennessee beat Alabama and Alabama beat Georgia and Ole Miss being Georgia, but Georgia obviously being Tennessee. How does that all play out? And can you say with certainty, Jerry, that if Georgia were to win this weekend, that they might not still be behind a Tennessee team?
No, I think they would probably be ahead. Because now you're talking about, you've got kind of a circular thing going on there, right? Where
Tennessee
beat Alabama. Yeah, right. So obviously head-to-head can't come into play. So now you're looking at and putting more weight on things like strength of schedule, the quality of the teams that beat you, things like that. And I think Tennessee definitely comes out third in that triangle because of the loss to Arkansas. The fact that the Alabama, win came at home, Georgia won at Texas, things like that, that come into play, more so when the head to head in this case just can't apply, then you're looking at strength of schedule. Well, Alabama and Georgia in particular, have played the two toughest schedules, two of the top five toughest schedules in the entire nation. So that's going to play. The Alabama win over Georgia, once you get it down to those two, is probably going to play. I think Tennessee comes out third in that mix. And Ole Miss is still in that pile as well.
Jerry, we appreciate the insight and the humor there with Miami playing with their
nice stuff.
Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks for having me on.
That was Jerry Palm, the national college football writer for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X at JP Palm CBS. We'll be right back with some steak tips on the other side of the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, and you guys are jamming out, apparently. I don't know what rhythm you're going to, Mike, but
it's not the rhythm of the song, I'll tell you that much.
It's not the rhythm of the song. I think he was making up his own song in his head. Hey, where did you say you were going? You needed to go somewhere that I've never heard of before?
A store.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Ollie's.
What is that?
You have never heard of Ollie's either?
I've heard
Ollie's
of it. I don't
bargain
know what it
outlet.
Is.
I've heard of Ollie's. I've never been there, but I've heard of it. It made me think of it
because there's a Trae Young like video game over there that's from Ollie's. It's got a price tag on it. And yeah, Ollie's bargain outlet, man. It's
what do you get there? What can I get?
Well,
there?
I gotta go.
Deals with
they
a
have,
Z at the end.
They have.
I just like saying deals. Look,
I got.
That's a Pensacola.
There's definitely. Look, man. Hey, we came up on coupons. Okay, you know what I mean.
I just like saying deals with a Z. I really do.
A lower middle class family, right?
I just like deals with a Z. I really do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ollie's bargain outlet, man. Not everybody shops there, but I gotta go get some carpet.
It makes
little pieces of carpet.
I see a drink that's pretty light colored.
The judgment's coming.
Not sure what kind of my coffee's straight up black today.
The judgment's coming.
There's tough morning for Bo. I'm sorry, buddy. I mean, wow. Talk about Tiffany taking you down hard. That was like.
But the follow-up facts,
you know what the best part is? I didn't know that we can have closing arguments. But speaking of pile jumping, we're talking about flight times to Denver.
Yeah.
Mike says something. I don't even think Steak heard him. Steak's like, yeah, he's right. He's right. And he was completely wrong, but Steak just pile jumped on me for some reason.
Listen, it's always the loud one that you have to just, take him down.
Yeah. Take him down,
right? That's why I was rooting for Tiff this morning.
Completely agree with that.
And then Mikey's been my boy for a long time.
So. I know.
It's not that I don't love you.
Did he used to get your breakfast?
Oh, come on, dude. Maybe got me breakfast twice.
Whoa, Steak, come on out. That's not... Look,
don't
tell fibs.
Back then, I needed help. I need help in the morning. Talk to my shrink about it. All right, I got a couple of things to talk to you guys about. So I was in New Orleans for the game and watching what the same thing that's been plaguing us for years, which is the Falcon pass rush. Mm. And I started fantasizing. First of all, we're going to have a great conversation about Jared Verse because I don't want to throw it all there now. The one thing I said the day after they drafted Michael Penix was the way this thing goes into a bigger debate is what if we're a good team or a really good team, but we watch one of these rookies go off as a pass rusher and start to fantasize that we could have been one player away in the postseason. Jared Verse is that guy. He's now second or third for rookie of the year. If you look at it behind Brock Bowers and Jaden, he's got 4.5 sacks. He is the best player on the Rams front line, and he'd be killing it for us. So, listen, we won't know how this thing played out, but Jared Verse would be our best player up front. It's not even close.
And I talked about this with Mike up yesterday a little bit, Steak, but Teron Armstead, who is Miami's left tackle, who he's facing off with one night, Teron Armstead's the highest-rated left tackle in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
And Jared Verse was making him look like he was a JV player at times.
And I said it the day after. we're going to fantasize that if we were in a playoff game and lose, what if we actually had a pass rush, a rookie pass? And by the way, he's going to be good for years. A lot of guys passed on him. He didn't go to, what, 18? Is that where he
went
overall?
Something like that, yeah.
So, but I'm telling you, that was the name. By the time it was draft, it was like we had moved on Dallas Turner to Jared Verse. Anyway,
I was going
to
say Dallas Turner not having that year in all fairness.
But so. I think we had already come to the conclusion, most of us, that Jared Verse would have been our best pick up front.
All right.
I'll talk about that in our show just to stir it up. Pass rushers all-time best tandems in history.
Oh, man.
Okay? In the sack era. You have any come to mind? You'll be shocked how many played. Can you name how many played for the Atlanta Falcons? All-time history. Top pass rushing duos.
Oh, man.
In history.
This is...
So
probably
I'm just
nine.
I'm just going. Well,
I was going to say God. Chuck Smith,
Chris Dolman. No, not on the Falcons, but they played for the Falcons.
Oh, okay, yeah,
that makes
my
more
bad.
Sense.
My
so
bad.
Number 11 all time, Chris Dolman and Keith Millard from the Minnesota Vikings in the 80s.
I was going to say it sounds like it's before my time.
Yeah, Dolman played on the 98 team.
Yeah, and Dolman had a 15.5 sack. Career with the Falcons over 2 years.
Yeah, he was still had some.
Number nine all time, Justin Tuck and Osi Umenyiora.
Dude,
right?
Yeah, saw that one up close. And what was that? 2010. We talked about that game the other day.
2011.
You know, Umenyiora had a 6 sack game in his career and a season where he forced 10 fumbles. Now again, we got him on the back end of his career for sure.
Yeah.
Right,
he gave you a little something though that
year.
Yeah,
OC. And I was going to say that's probably a good combination to talk about him. Because
number eight all time, Cornelius Bennett and Bruce Smith.
Hey.
Yeah,
Biscuit played here for 2 years.
Yeah,
right?
Super Bowl team.
Say something right now. We were doing a reunion of sorts one weekend. Falcons, former players, and I saw Cornelius Bennett's name on the list of he didn't show up, but I was like, oh my God! I mean, a Bama guy stake. Dude, you see Cornelius Bennett's name rolling around, you're like, dude, it's go time.
Why you got to call him out for not showing up?
Well, I didn't make it. I knew the follow-up was going to be, oh, how cool was that to meet him? And I was going to be like, I didn't.
But when you start to think about it, like that, I guess that was our formula, is take the guys like literally on the back end of their career and have them roll through
Atlanta.
Yeah,
we're still doing that, huh? Matthew Jones.
Well, I was going to say, you don't always plan on it being the back. You plan on them having, many more years left.
Well, you certainly did with Matthew Judon, right?
Well, I mean,
I don't always think,
you didn't think Ray Edwards was on the back end of his career, and this was his last stop. So,
well,
there you go.
Yeah, but in defense of that, Ray Edwards was never – he wasn't brought here to be great. He was here to be good and complimentary, and he wasn't either.
I'll give you the final top seven all time. Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware for the Broncos.
Dogs.
Right?
Dogs.
In the 2012, 2014, those guys dominating. The combination, I guess it was of – what was it with the Colts and Dwight Freeney?
Robert Mathis.
And Robert Mathis, exactly.
We had Freeney here, remember?
Oh, I have nightmares
Robert
right now.
Yeah.
I got the Colts sweats right now, dude.
Did you
lineman's
try
nightmare.
To block those guys?
No, but try would be the key word. I just, when you watch guys like that on film, it just, it's terrifying.
Mathis led the league in forced fumble 3 times, both finished as top 20 all-time sack guys.
Oh.
Number 5, Leonard Marshall and Lawrence Taylor.
Mm.
Number 4, Ricky Jackson and Pat Swilling with the Saints. Neil Smith and Derek Thomas with the Chiefs. Number 2, Richard Dent. He did not play here. He lived in Atlanta, though, right?
Mm.
And Dan Hampton, and number 1 all-time, Clyde Simmons and Reggie White are ranked as the best 1-2 combo in history.
I don't know, man. Next week, can we do best combo offensive lineman of all time?
Let me ask you.
Yeah, everybody wants to hear that list.
That's terrifying.
If we had a 12, 13 sack guy on this team, are we a Super Bowl contender, like legit top of the NFC Super Bowl contender?
Yes, but...
I think you
in
have
order,
to be.
In order, yeah, and the only way this team's going to have anybody get sacks is they have to win immediately.
Aren't we just one pass rush away from being able to win a Super Bowl? I mean, when you really look at it, I don't know. Kirk Cousins and the offense needs to score more. We have no problem with our secondary. Linebackers are middle of the road. If we had a pass rush, though.
But I think that's what they thought Judon was going to be when he came here.
I agree.
Maybe he still can. Maybe the back half of the season.
Jared Verse is that guy. And listen. Hindsight's the easiest game to play when you look at drafts, right?
Yeah.
But here's the difference. If we didn't take Michael Penix, we would have drafted the best defensive pass rusher. That's who we would have drafted. We were never going to draft Brock Bowers. So, even though I love him.
No,
we weren't going to draft a receiver.
Can't draft two.
We would have drafted a pass rush, and we probably would have drafted Jared Verse and he is an elite player right now as a rookie.
Well, and here's what I'll say. You were in the Danielle Hunter boat, were you not? Like, you had an offer out there to Danielle Hunter. And if you look at the best pass rushing combinations from the last few years, Matthew Judon and Josh Uche are right there for New England.
I don't understand what's happened.
It's not good.
Yeah. All right. Well, congrats to Tiff, and thanks to her doggy for waking her up. Mike, not only are you a handsome man, but you exude a sense of confidence.
Losing my hair rapidly.
You continue to fight the fight, which I love about you. You're like that pit bull. You're like that pit bull that never gives up. You know?
You just said, hey, you guys did great, and you gave max effort. We appreciate that. Hey, thank you.
Oh, I'm dying.
All right. The Steakhouse is next. That's it for us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.